can you give me a feel for what percentage of, on an annual basis, or biennial basis, whatever, historically, what percentage of your total budget has been benefits paid out to unemployed workers?
This dollar figure, Chairman Durfler, Representative Johnson, if I'm understanding your question, this dollar figure would be exclusive of any benefits paid.
I'm talking about this big one on the right-hand side there. Approximately $312 million a year. Last year, we paid $213 million to unemployed workers. I don't have the figure for last year's budget, though. I don't know what percentage that 213 was of last year's equivalent to this figure here.
Chairman Durfler, Representative Johnson, what we're looking for then is the amount of contributions that employers made in last biennium. And it figures out to be about $300 million per year that employers are contributing. Okay. And it would be an after-the-fact sort of scenario, because we pay the benefits out to the individuals, then, if you will, add up what's left and create the ratio which projects then at what rate we're going to need to charge employers taxes for the next year.
Okay. May I inquire? Isn't the point of what you're doing is that you're trying to raise more during good years so you can set aside money for the bad years?
Chairman Durfler, Representative Mannix, that is the strategy of trust fund creation.
And the problem you're having with the federal government is that they're using the shell game of the Goodyear money, and they're constantly adding it on. They're raising the level that you have to set aside for the bad years to the point of requiring set-asides that are beyond reason. On the other hand, you have to meet those obligations. We'll be hearing later today about how you want to at least crunch back on that shell game a little bit by setting aside some of this money for state uses.
Representative Durfler, Representative Mannix, the shell game is not quite as profound on the contribution side, because that is a formula-controlled scenario. And I suppose the only way that there would be a shell game there is that in computing the formula, we need to use the last 10 years' experience as the window in which we look. And the federal government requires that you need 1.5 times your worst year. Oregon's worst year is 1982. And we will be talking about that later this morning when we get into the bills. In 1992, we will begin to move away from that worst year, and that, in fact, will have an effect on the fund. So the shell game is not as predominant on this side of the page, the contribution side of the page, as it is on the UI and ES administration side of the page.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I just want to follow up while we're still looking at this chart. To get back to Representative Johnson's question earlier, it's my understanding that the state unemployment contributions are used just for benefits, basically, and the federal is what's supposed to be working for administration.
That's correct.
And so, I mean, I think his question may have been how much of the state is used for administration, and very little. Can you give us any kind of an idea how much of the state's unemployment contribution is for administration?
Chairman Durfler, Representative Dominey, that's exactly where we're going when we begin to talk about the diversion concept. In the last biennium, $11 million from the contribution side was diverted to be used for the administration side. This picture demonstrates also the diversion concept, and this is why we laid it out this way, hoping to get that a picture would be worth 1,000 words. From the contributions that employers pay, this would be the third biennium that the legislature has approved this diversion of those contribution dollars to create a fund to supplement the federal funding and to support the administration of the unemployment insurance program and the employment service. For this biennium, the governor's budget would require 0.76% to be diverted in one quarter from those contributions to create a $29 million diversion package, and I know we'll be spending more time on that this morning when we deal with House Bill 2252.
And it was $11 million last biennium that we...
Chairman Durfler, that's correct, about 11.
And this biennium, we're looking at almost $30 million?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
The issues that we see before the Employment Division in this biennium include solving that decreased federal administrative funding issue. And the congressional pressure, it sounds a bit like David and Goliath, but we remain resolute in our ability to have an effect upon Congress. We're fortunate to have several employers who will finance their own way to Washington, D.C. in February to do some lobbying on the Hill again for this kind of change that needs to be made. We're watching national legislation very carefully. As you can imagine, we're not the only state who feels this problem and is working toward a solution. There are some pieces of legislation that will hopefully get the budgeting of the employment security system offline budget so it is not affected by budget reduction actions. The other solution we will talk more about this morning, and that's the creation of the Benefit Reserve Fund. We feel that that is an option to the regular kind of diversion that will provide a longer-term funding and not have a continual depletion of the fund in terms of providing those administration dollars. And the third issue is the diversion for the 91-93 biennium for the Employment Division. There are some program issues that this committee probably will hear about. One we've called leadership in the workforce development and coordination area. In the governor's budget, the JTPA programs are moved to the Employment Division. There's a whole workforce development strategy that is going to be a part of this governor's administration, and the Employment Division has been working very closely with that so that there can be a sense of coordination of the programs that provide placement, training, and retraining services. The
Excuse me, Chairman Durfler. I'm sorry. JTPA, please.
Oh, I apologize. Chairman Durfler, Representative Watt, the Job Training Partnership Act.
Thank you.
And is this the first time that unemployment funds have been used for those purposes?
Excuse me, Chairman Durfler.
Is this the first time unemployment funds have been used for the job training programs?
Chairman Durfler, I don't mean to confuse. The JTPA program, Job Training Partnership Act, has its fund source, a federal fund source. So in that merger, they bring their dollars with them, if you will. Okay. We would not be using unemployment insurance administrative dollars.
It's just a transfer to your agency?
That's right. It would be
and where has it been previously then?
Most recently, currently, it's at the Department of Economic Development, and okay. Before that, it was at Intergovernmental Affairs in the Executive Department.
Okay, thank you.
May I inquire?
Yes.
excuse me. I noticed in one of your other transition statements, one of the agenda items is to reposition the Employment Division as a leading agency on employment and training issues. Is this transfer part of that whole vision of the Employment Division as the central lead agency on employment and training issues?
Chairman Durfler, Representative Mannix, though that was not a part of our vision when we wrote the transition paper, yes, that is the beginning of that consolidation and a point of accountability within the executive branch. There will be a senior policy advisor in Governor Roberts' office on workforce development issues. And there is a proposal for a governing body that would be staffed outside of that. But it is the repositioning is the concept of offering ourselves up, if you will, for that leadership responsibility that we see throughout the field office.
I have no problem with that, and I'm not suggesting that there's any kind of empire building going on. In fact, I'm pleased with the whole attitude and idea that's reflected in that. Are there other operational activities of the executive branch that you anticipate will be moved under the purview of the Employment Division during this legislative session, or that are going to be proposed to be moved?
Chairman Durfler, Representative Mannix, I know of no other functions that are proposed to be moved to the Employment Division.
Thank you.
The long-term simplification of unemployment insurance is a concept that we have on the time charts for the next biennium. I have been with the Employment Division since late 1989, and we believe that what we ought to do is take a look at ourselves and the choices that we have by administrative rule and policy within the purview of statutory authority to administer the program in this biennium, and then begin working on what the statutory changes are that we would recommend to the program as a whole, sort of a real global look at the unemployment insurance program. It's my understanding, and there are better historians in the room than I, that that kind of complete look at the unemployment insurance program is probably ripe to happen. That has not happened for some time. So we have begun by putting together internal committees to look at ourselves, and we have proven that unemployment insurance simplification is not an oxymoron. In fact, we can simplify this program, maintaining its integrity and its credibility. And so we have begun that process within the division, and we see ourselves working with this committee to create that unemployment reform package that we would see introducing for the 93-95 biennium. Improving the current unemployment insurance program, there are three rather fine-tuning kinds of bills that will come before this committee. Strengthening some tools for collection of delinquent taxes, simplifying employer payroll reporting, and fine-tuning one federal requirement with regard to child support, which is a conformity issue wherein the federal government is suggesting this change. And the situation you will hear about here is that we're doing it right. The language the feds don't think is quite appropriate, so we need to come in for a minor statutory change in regard to withholding of child support.
Chairman Durfler?
Representative Watt?
Sorry. Could you be a little more specific briefly on those three points of the strengthening of tools to collect delinquent taxes? What kind of numbers are you looking at in delinquent taxes to be collected?
That package, Chairman Durfler, Representative Watt, includes the ability for us to collect attorney's fees, has a piece that talks about the type of liens that we can file. There are recommendations, quite frankly, from our Attorney General who does our collections work that said that these things would make their job easier in regard to tax collection. If you would like more specifics, I would look back to Steve Tager, our legislative liaison, who could give you those bullets. Rejoin.
I would be interested to know what are the outstanding delinquent taxes. Do you have a number on that?
Chairman Durfler, Representative Watt, we don't have that number on our fingertips. We'll get that back to you.
That's
a good question. Mr. Chair, I just want to follow up on the program issues, knowing what just happened with the handicap issues in federal government. Do you have on your agenda anything in this legislature that we need to do about employment dealing with the handicap and disabled? The new federal laws that regulate some things, I was surprised to see it missing from your program issues. Do you have an agenda that we need to be thinking about?
Chairman Durfler, Representative Domini, my understanding is that there's not a requirement for statutory changes made in Oregon. It is certainly a topic, a big topic of consideration in regard to training and education as it regards, but I'm not familiar with statutory changes. We're not proposing any. It would, I don't think, fall within our purview. I'm looking to Chuck Diamond from the department whether those changes would be coming for the vocational rehabilitation.
Well, Aaron, and we also, in terms of the buildings,
Chairman Durfler, Representative Domini, we are implementing the language of the Congressional Act in terms of making certain that all buildings are accessible and our services are being delivered in a way that's non-discriminatory to people with disabilities. I don't believe that there is a requirement or a need for state statute change implement.
Just to follow up, so I just want to make it clear, you have researched it and don't find any statutory problems in our laws dealing with taking away some of those barriers in employment for handicap.
Chairman Durfler, Representative Dominey, the research I have not done, nor has the Employment Division done that research. What I'm saying to you is we are beginning implementing that in terms of the requirements that employers have. I'm not familiar with any changes we need to make.
Representative Mannix?
As a follow-up on that, I believe that we had a report from the Department of Insurance and Finance that they're using some of the workers' compensation, reemployment, job modification programs to modify work sites for the handicapped. Do you work at all with that, or is that something that they carry on their own?
Chairman Durfler, Representative Mannix, that is an area where we are working to have a closer relationship in terms of that reemployment. I think there is some relationship going on in the field now in regard to those programs, and our local office manager and field operations administrator are nodding yes, okay. But that's an area where we feel we could be more helpful.
Friendly suggestion would be that there's a lot of money out there in their account for reemployment efforts for people who have reentry problems, and to the extent that you folks are able to identify those situations and bring them in, that's a real help. Thank you.
We appreciate that suggestion. The legislative proposals then, in a nutshell, appear on the next page for the 91-93 biennium. There are a host of budget proposals, and perhaps I'll reserve that discussion for the initial hearings on both of those bills. The Benefit Reserve Fund is one of the bills that we'll be talking about at 9:30, the diversion for the 91-93 biennium, and then the proposals that I briefly alluded to earlier as program issues, the collections package, the wage subjectivity, and the conformity issue as it regards the withholding of child support. Briefly, the budget themes that will be a part of the packages that you'll be hearing about, and I understand you may say, this is a ways and means thing, why are you bothering us with this? But we wanted to just give you a brief overview of what supports the, why we would support the concept of diversion. Within those packages are an expansion of 11 physical locations, presence, let me say, not office, because we don't envision bricks and mortar in this concept. What we envision are 11 expanded delivery points to ease both the access to the system for the employer and the applicant. The style of service is another theme that will be carried through the budget. We're striving for the most efficient organizational structure within the Employment Division. We don't believe we're quite there yet. An increased emphasis on disadvantaged workers and how it is that we can serve them either by referrals to supportive services that will help them upgrade and become job ready and marketable. Providing services to dislocated workers, which is key to us right now, particularly in our team-dependent communities. And to have an Employment Division workforce that is trained and friendly and helpful to the customers, the point that Representative Dominey was making earlier. The method of service is also very important to us, and we are truly embracing automation to enhance that method of service. During the later part of the 80s, we heard a tremendous amount about the information or knowledge worker, and I believe that the work that the Employment Division is consists of knowledge or information work. We take information, we need to file information, and we need to retrieve that information in a myriad of different ways, either for performing that work or doing the statistical reporting on what it is that we do. We are pleased to have a current automated technology that allows us to find people within the system, and it's a statewide pool of applicants that meet the employer's job requirements. We're not doing computer match because we do want human involvement in that. But in terms of locating the files as a starting point of who those applicants are that can best serve the employer's needs, we're embracing technology to do that.
Deb, could I ask a question? What's lacking? Is it the employers using your services, for the employees. Where do you feel like you need improvement?
Chairman Durfel, I would say in both instances. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to say what comes first. Applicants are drawn to us by the quality and quantity of job orders that we have listed. And of course, employers are drawn to us by the talent of our applicant pool. So we feel that we need to work at drawing from the value of our service. By having good customer service, that we need to draw both types of customers simultaneously and with equal intensity. Now, we understand that through economic times that may change a bit, but we believe that we need both of those to be as successful as possible.
Okay.
The future technology we have applied not only for diversion funding to support us, but we've been very aggressive at applying for federal automation grants. We're going to get as many of those dollars back as possible. They will know that Oregon is here and that we have needs. And so we have concepts that are currently captured in those grants, which would allow us to do different kinds of delivery. We envision the ability of an employer who has an automated system, whose computer can talk to our computer. We envision services being available to applicants where they are. Would that be in shopping malls? Would that be in community service organizations? We're working to develop that technology so as much of that information can be taken out to where people are, as well as them coming to us. In this world of automation, there are many ways that we can embrace that, and we don't need this one-on-one, in-our-office kind of relationship to best deliver our services.
May I inquire? Representative Mannix?
Have you had much contact with other divisions of human resources about the idea of having, I'll call it, access in malls or whatever? That is, there may be other agencies that want to do the same thing and might be able to work with you on a local access terminal or office or staffing for some regional local offices?
Chairman Durfler, Representative Mannix, that is very important to us, that kind of mechanism and hardware can be available to all. There's an effort being made right now. There's a search going on for the information service director for the entire department so that these systems can be linked together and we can share hardware terminals for the delivery of that information. There's another, I just want to touch on the word, and sometime if there's interest, we would be happy to display it. The state of Hawaii has done a remarkable job with touchscreen technology in delivering hosts of services to people. The example that we saw was that you could see if you're eligible for the state health insurance program in Hawaii called SHIP by going up to this terminal, which talks to you, if you will. There's a visual picture of an individual, and you can type in, not on the keyboard, on the screen, all about you, and it tells you whether you're eligible for that program or not. We're interested in that kind of application for lots of things, but what first comes to mind is unemployment insurance. Do I qualify? Now, we would need to verify that information, but it gives people a starting point, and again, in a self-help, sort of extended hours concept.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Watt.
Speaking to your technology, can you briefly tell me about your existing technology, how long before the technology becomes obsolete with technological advances that we're having in the industry increasing at such a rapid rate? You indicated also in being able to tie in with the employer and the services through technology, most employers, at least in small-type business applications, are using local area network technology. Are you using mainframe type applications right now with terminals? Do you plan on moving into a local area technology? And I realize I may be getting a little technical here, but it is a question that's important.
Chairman Durfler, Representative Watt, yes, we're using mainframe and terminals. Yes, we're looking at and considering a LAN, a local area network. And on Wednesday, part of the tour time that we've dedicated for you is time with our data processing manager, who does a tremendous job of making you feel very computer literate in talking with him. He's very knowledgeable. His name is Ward Kent. And he can give you a very nice overview of our vision for the Employment Division's automation program. We have a sense, and we know that technology is out here, business application is back here, maybe we're here somewhere, and we want to catch up because we feel that that is a good business practice in terms of embracing that technology where it works for us. And we don't want to mechanize what we do. We want to redo what we do to be as efficient as possible. So we're truly into automating what we're doing, not mechanizing what we're doing.
Thank you.
This map gives you a picture of black dots currently where we have Employment Division offices, black squares, current what we call satellite locations, and dotted squares, those 11 spots where we would like to expand. And we wanted to provide that for you as a visual, maybe a handy reference so that you know where it is that we're located and where it is that we would like to have a presence throughout the state of Oregon.
Sure. I was just wondering, because in Cottage Grove they used to have an employment office, and it's right in the middle of what has become the timber, where the real timber dislocated workers are sitting at, is in Douglas and Lane. And I don't see any expansion at all in those areas. Is there a reason? Have you, you feel that the Springfield office is significant enough to take care of it? What's the logic behind the ones that you want to expand? Why did you look at them instead of maybe some of the others?
Chairman Durfler, Representative Dominey, let me give you a summary, condensed answer, but I think that we would like to get back with you with more of our analysis, because we did spend an awful lot of time looking at about three different factors. One would be the economy in that area. This is the opposite of your Cottage Grove question, but where is their expansion? Where is their activity? Where is their help needed to get that workforce to those growing businesses? Where are their declines, and where is it that we need an unemployment insurance presence, if you will, to help with that dislocated worker? And then we looked at projections of labor market growth in counties throughout the state. So why specifically Cottage Grove as an entity did not come up, I can't share with you as we stand here. I'd like to come back and share that analysis with you regarding that specific location. But generally, we looked in a way that we could best serve the needs, both current and projected, within this next biennium, and that's how we got to these suggested sites. Let me move to the last chart that I'd like to share with you. And again, this is looking forward a bit. And it's a commitment by the Employment Division, I think, to be outcome accountable as we are income accountable. We can do a pretty good job of telling you what kind of resources come into the Employment Division. And what we're working on is being able to relate back to you and your constituents, what's the result? What's the benefit of having these dollars in these communities for the services? So what we have dedicated ourselves to do is to look at what the people of Oregon have described as where they want to be, as contained in the Oregon Benchmark document. What's our vision? Where do we want to be and by when? Then we've taken those parts of the benchmarks that we feel we can have an impact upon, and determine then what the Employment Division's objectives ought to be.
And where'd you get the benchmarks?
The benchmarks, Chairman Durfler, are a product of the Oregon Progress Board, which has worked for the past 2 to 3 years, creating, number one, the Oregon Shines document, which was a description of Oregon, and then a tremendous amount of input for where it is that we would want to be by the turn of the century, by 10 years out from the turn of the century, in terms of workforce and health and communities. And many of those benchmarks center around, in fact, some of the key benchmarks are to have the best trained workforce in the United States, and then the best trained workforce in the world. And so then the Progress Board has gone throughout the state talking to lots of people asking how is it that we will reach that benchmark, looking at the education system, the training system. So we've taken that product. This bill would reduces the tax rates as we do in the diversion concept for those quarters in which we are diverting income from our trust account for payment of benefits in Washington, D.C. to the benefit reserve fund. It then adds a percentage 0.56% in those quarters, and that represents the amount of dollars that would stay in Oregon and be contributed to the benefit reserve fund. This diversion would begin in 1992, and the end of the diversion would be in 1995. Our projections indicate that the accumulation of interest would be at such a level to provide this gap financing for the Employment Division beginning with the 93-95 biennium. So the creation of the Benefit Reserve Fund would begin in 1992, but it would not mature or ripen so that the proceeds would be adequate enough to meet the need until the beginning of the 93-95 biennium. This bill also makes a change in Schedules 3, 2, and 1 of the current tax tables for a different purpose. Our actuaries at the Employment Division indicate that there will be a significant change in the number of dollars that will need to be contributed to the fund once the experience of 1982, calendar year 1982, and the experience is how many dollars of benefits we paid during that time is removed from our formula calculation. Tax table number 4, the middle tax table, is the tax table where we want to be. That's the place where the balance is arrived between the number of dollars coming into the fund and the dollars going out of the fund. If we were to leave the percentage of total payroll tax column alone in Schedules 3, 2, and 1, we feel that we would be receiving far more dollars than would be necessary. So we have done those two things in this bill, created the Benefit Reserve Fund, and are suggesting via the bill a reduction of the rates for those bottom three tax tables so that we do not produce a fund that is too large, extraordinarily large. And this has been brought to the our attention by our actuaries. Those rate reductions would sunset, if you will, after 1995.
Mr. Chair? My question is one about the reserve and how often you would take the money, the interest money that was accrued, how often would it be taken off there? Because the longer it stays in there, the more interest it would build. Is it your plan to take it out annually, quarterly, the interest that you derive off from this after 85? And it's my understanding you wouldn't take any interest money until after 85. Am I getting the perception right? And then once you do, how often would you be taking it out after that?
Chairman Durfler, Representative Dominey, the diversion dollars, if I may say, are the last dollars that we spend in terms of the dollars that are appropriated now. I mean, we first spend the dollars that are come to us from the federal government. So we would dip into that account, that interest account, at the last possible moment that those dollars would be needed. And beyond that, I do not think that we have given, at least I don't have the answers, and let me check and get back to you, the precision with which that use of the dollars would happen. But we would certainly use those dollars last and therefore allow as much interest as possible to accumulate on those dollars.
Mr. Chair, I would hope that it wouldn't be any more often than quarterly because of the interest that you'd accrue. Mm-hmm.
Robert?
Thank you. What is the amount of diversion dollars that we're anticipating that this will create? Is it that we're given two numbers earlier? One was 1.5 and one was 3 million. Are those same numbers that we're chatting about now?
Chairman Durfler, Representative Repine, the bill before us, 2084, is the diversion that would create that benefit reserve fund we are projecting in the amount of about $200 million. Then it is our projection that the interest on those dollars invested in the benefit reserve fund would be in the neighborhood of $25 million. And those are projected numbers. There are many variables that can...
You're expecting to get $25 million back for a $200 million investment? Is that what you're
over
saying?
Over the course of a couple of years.
Over two years? Oh. Okay. So it's about 12% of that.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair?
Is it correct to summarize this bill by saying that it's a increased temporary diversion to create a fund from which the interest will make it so we don't need any future diversions?
Chairman Durfler, Representative Johnson, that is the premise of House Bill 2084.
And what would happen if the feds suddenly loosened up and decided to send us the monies that we have coming?
Chairman Durfler, the appropriation of the dollars that would be generated, the interest dollars, must be done each legislative session by the legislature.
Mm-hmm.
So there is the certainty that's within this bill is the creation of the fund and its use solely for dollars. It will take legislative action to each time to appropriate the use of those interest dollars. So I appreciate your positive optimism about the solution of this problem at the federal level. And as I read the bill, there is no guarantee that these interest dollars will be spent. That would take a legislative action.
This is not going to have any effect on the payroll tax.
Chairman Durfler, I stop at the word any, but the way that this has been described, set up is that it does not affect the employer's account. And if I may use the table on which information lies for people to pick up about the bills and the top of the brass to describe this. What this bill does, the top of the brass is the level at which employers will be paying their tax rate. And what this bill does, and all of those dollars are then sent to Washington, D.C. for our unemployment insurance trust account. What this bill does is lower the rate in the statute down to the plane of the tabletop for the quarters in which we're diverting. The difference between the tabletop and the top of the brass is that diverted amount that would go in to create the benefit trust fund. And that is the 56 hundredths of 1% that you see at the end of the statute. We lower the rates because we have to send whatever rates, whatever the result is of the rate table by employer to Washington, D.C. The legislature can lower that rate and essentially add it back on, and the employer doesn't feel a difference. Now, the reason I stop at the word any, and I want to make the record clear, is that if all of those dollars were going to Washington, D.C., our fund in Washington, D.C. would grow by the interest dollars generated on it there. It, too, is invested there. So it is not without a price, but we feel the price is minimal in comparison to spending those premium dollars or the request for those premium dollars each biennium. So there's a little ripple in the trust fund by keeping that interest. And the only way we can keep the interest is by keeping the dollars here. So any effect is negligible and certainly would not cause an increase in employers' rates.
Why would you use this process rather than just coming back to the legislature and asking, like you are this time, for $11 million to fund those programs?
Chairman Durfler, our sense in creation of this fund is to maintain some control of those dollars here, what we can of those trust fund dollars. And secondarily, it feels better to us and to those people who advise us, our advisory council members, to be spending the interest accumulated by those premium dollars invested in Oregon than it does to spend the premium dollars themselves that are diverted from the employer's
but
trust.
But you're still losing those interest dollars back in the fund. That's back correct. In Washington. Mm-hmm. Any other questions?
Just administrative question. How would this affect the way an employer pays, i.e., is it going to create more paperwork for the employer, or is this going to be invisible to them? They continue to pay the same rate, and then you administrate the difference?
Chairman Durfler, Representative Watt, it is invisible to the employer. Fortunately, it doesn't require any paper or recalculation on the employer's part.
Thank you. Sure.
Yeah, I think Bob had a question first, and we'll get back to you.
I'm assuming that there's, that in order to do what we're proposing, there is no federal concerns. There's maybe this has been done some other states possibly, and we're just kind of modeling or mimicking those states.
Chairman Durfler, Representative Repine, my understanding is that no other state is currently doing this. There are other states, and I know specifically Idaho has a similar proposal before their legislature. The federal government reviews our legislation prior to the time that it's pre-sessioned filed, and we got a clean reading on this particular concept, this benefit reserve concept, from those who read state legislative proposals for what they call conformity issues. So at this point, the reading and the opinion from the federal government is clear and clean regarding this proposal.
Mrs. Manson, with the general, the rest of this question being the phrase, there's no free lunch, you tell us that over the next few years, this program, this extra 56 cents or 0.56 hundredths or whatever the decimals are here, will generate $200 million into this fund, right?
That's correct.
And yet it won't affect the way the employers pay or the amount the employers are required to pay. That $200 million is coming out of then the amount that would have otherwise gone into the unemployment trust fund for purposes of being available for unemployed workers' benefits. Is that correct?
Chairman Durfler, Representative Johnson, that is correct.
Okay, so ultimately the people who could potentially be paying for this are the ones who would not have, for whom there would be no benefits available if that fund got depleted. Want me to say it again?
Please.
There's people out there who, if they become unemployed, have a right to get paid unemployment mm-hmm. benefits, and that the source of those monies is the unemployment trust fund. Mm-hmm. We're taking $200 million out of that fund, in essence, over the next few years, which means that if we have a big recession, a lot of people are unemployed and making demands on that fund, it will be used up. We're talking about it being used up $200 million short of when it would have been used up otherwise. Is that correct?
Chairman Durfler, Representative Johnson, that is true, but the bill creates that the only use for that $200 million in Oregon is to pay those unemployment insurance benefits. So in the unforeseen event that, in fact, the trust fund in Washington, D.C. okay. would be spent through, we would move over right. and spend those dollars.
So these dollars will still be used for that purpose. They're just put in a separate fund, hoping that we don't need to use them for that.
That is correct.
Okay.
So prior to the time of borrowing, which is the state's option when their trust fund is spent, Oregon would move over and spend that $200 million.
So the only thing we're losing then is the interest, and right now the interest that's on the unemployment trust fund is it just put into the trust fund?
Chairman Durfler, Representative Johnson, that's
okay,
correct.
Okay, so that $25 million a year that you mentioned before is the only part that we're really losing. Okay, thank you.
Representative Repine.
Thank you. It talks about the state treasurer would be the investor for this fund. Is there any particular capacities he can or cannot invest these funds in federally or statutorily for the state? And would his, do you have a sense that his yield would be greater than what we get presently under the interest that's accrued through the federal government?
Chairman Durfler, Representative Repine, I'm not skilled to answer those questions in terms of comparative yield of investments on state and federal levels and the directions. I'd be happy to confer and provide that information. That's a good question.
Mr. Chair, the only reason I bring that up is it somewhat goes to what Representative Johnson was talking about. The Treasurer has done a phenomenal job of investment on behalf of the state, and I would suspect that he has the ability to turn a better yield maybe than our federal government might.
Good point. You mentioned that they hadn't objected to this proposal. Have you specifically asked them if it was okay? And they've responded okay.
Chairman Durfler, I did not mean to be hedging in my response. Yet we do not have any objections. It is an okay proposal as it regards the federal government's view of this legislation.
There's a possibility of them changing their mind if we were to approve this.
Well, Chairman Durfler, you're asking me to speak for the federal government, and it would be unusual at this time, given the process of approval that we have gone through, which is the customary bill approval process with the federal government. Okay. I would submit anything, however, could happen.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you very much for the testimony. You want to go into a work session on it?
Yeah, sure.
Excuse me. Right? I'm sorry.
Am I on the list?
You're on the list.
Thank you.
Sorry about that.
Check the list.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Irv Fletcher, chair of the Unemployment Insurance Advisory Committee, a committee composed of four management, four labor, and four public members, who unanimously endorse both of these bills, and I might say Carl Frederick hardly ever allows me to speak for him. He's a member of the committee and the past chair, but he also voted yes to endorse both of these bills. And just as an editorial aside, for those who have connections with the Department of Labor and the Bush administration, I suggest you lobby them so we don't need these kind of bills. They are impounding the money. Without that, I'll be brief. You want me to be brief.
Any questions, Mr. Fletcher? Irv, I know this has been going on for several years, so unfortunately, I don't think any of us have been able to lobby effectively on this particular.
Yeah, the diversion, I think this is the second time we've gone after that. It isn't something that's been going forever, but certainly we'd like to have you use your interests, your influence in high places to try to stop it.
Show you how much influence we have. Yep.
No.
Okay, fine.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, any more questions? Okay, we're going to go into work session on it. Mr. Manning?
Chairman, I move that we refer House Bill 2250. Whoops, did I get the right number?
No, 2084.
2084. To the floor with a due pass recommendation. Do we have a subsequent referral of Ways and Means on this by any chance? No, okay. To the floor was a due pass recommendation.
There's no general funding on this one. Okay, any discussion on the motion? Okay, you want to call a roll, please?
Representative Edmondson?
Aye.
Representative Johnson? Representative Mannix?
Aye.
Representative Rapine?
Aye.
Representative Watt?
Aye.
Representative Dominic?
Aye.
Representative Dörfler?
Aye. Motion passes. Have a volunteer that wants to carry it on the floor.
I'll carry it, Mr. Chairman, since I lost my other one.
All right. You have it.
First labor meeting.
Okay. We'll go to the next bill, which is 2252.
That would be no fun.
Good.
There's amendments to this.
There's amendments to
this. Chairman Dörfler and members of the committee, for the record, I'm Pamela Manson, Administrator of the Employment Division. House Bill 2252 is a bill which creates a diversion of funds from the insurance contributions employers make in the state of Oregon for the benefit of the administration of the Unemployment Insurance Program, the Employment Service Program, and this year the placement aspect of the welfare reform program called JOBS. In this diversion package, there would be a one-quarter diversion from the contributions to create the expected $29 million that is needed to provide for those three purposes. And again, I would use the analogy of the two planes, of the table and the brass. The employer would pay at the rate, the higher rate, at the top level of the brass. For one quarter, we would reduce the rates, add a surcharge, as the bill is written before you, 58/100% to create that difference, which is the gap financing, or the $29 million, which is needed for the base restoration of the Unemployment Insurance Program, the Employment Service Program, and the support of the Welfare Reform Program. In the materials which have been handed to you on page 3, included in that description is the description of a bit of the governor's budget and a look at what constitutes that $29 million. Approximately $18 million is the base restoration for the Unemployment Insurance Program and the Employment Service Program. There is an enhancement package of $3.3 million, and there is the placement component for the new jobs program of $7.5 million, which brings us to the total of the diversion package of $29 million. Now, the bill that is before us has a diversion factor in it, which would create about $22 million as 2252 is written before you. This bill was filed prior to the time that the governor's budget was finalized. In the final processes of the governor's budget, the concept of the Employment Division more vigorously and aggressively working with the Welfare Reform Program came into being. So the bill before us would need to be amended, and I believe the committee administrator has that amendment, to create the diversion of 76/100% to yield the $29 million.
Sure. That's instead of the 5,800th?
That's correct.
And you're saying 7,600th now?
That's correct.
Thank you. I didn't mean to interrupt your flow. I just wanted to make sure I was correct.
Mr. Chairman, do we have an amended bill, or is this just a friendly bill?
I have the amendment.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to ask a question. How close did you come to hitting your target in the last diversion? We did this 2 years ago in the 89-91. How close were we to where we... what we needed?
Chairman Durfler, Representative Dominey, as it looks right now, as we're just have a few months remaining in this biennium, we're very close in terms of projecting the appropriations that the federal government would have supplied to us and the need that we would have. There may be a somewhat of a surplus in the diversion dollars, but not of any magnitude. We're very close to what was projected.
Mr. Chairman? The change in the tax schedules which you're proposing is simply a follow-up on the change from 58 to 76 one-hundredths.
Chairman Durfler, Representative Mannix, that's correct.
Thank you. And you've double-checked those figures, I guess.
Chairman Durfler, Representative Mannix, probably quintuple-checked those figures.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions on this? Yeah, I guess I'm a little bit of a loss. Maybe you have to go with me just a little more. Last time we were talking about $11 million, now we're talking about $29 million. And would you go over those differences again for me, please?
Chairman Durfler, this year, I think for comparison, it would be good to compare the $11 million to the $18 million, which is, I'm on page 3 of the materials which we handed to you, which we call the Unemployment Insurance Base Restoration and the Employment Service Base Restoration. I think that would be a comparable level. So, in effect, we would be, if we were keeping the Employment Division where it is right now, we're asking for $7 million more to run that base operation. And I would suggest that that is very close to an inflationary factor, keeping the Employment Division whole. Through the budget appeal process, our enhancement packages were cut back from what we proposed to the $3.3 million. So that is an add-on, if you will, to support the automation enhancements and the increase in the disadvantaged worker package, and to support the creation of the Office of the 90s. Those decision packages that are listed there, we referred to as enhancement packages, and that also includes the expanded offices which I made reference to in our overview earlier today, 11 sites where we would propose an expanded or additional presence throughout the state of Oregon.
May I inquire?
Yes.
This actually still will leave you at a lower service level than you were back pre-1982 or so, wouldn't it?
Chairman Durfler, Representative Mannix, that's very correct. This division had 2,200 employees at the beginning of 1980, and we're at roughly, below 1,100 employees as we work through the 90s.
And as I understand this, we've got two concepts here. One is extension of service to more localities, which will allow you, one, to deal with foreseeable economic difficulties as well as economic opportunities. One is the job shrinkage in some communities, help those people, job enhancement in other communities. The second thrust is, I'll call it the spirit of Measure 7 thrust. That is, what you're trying to do is move into our own jobs enhancement program for people on welfare, which is what Measure 7 is about. But this actually moves through pre-authorized channels to try to implement that notion.
Chairman Durfler, Representative Mannix, It is my opinion that ballot measure 7 would go much further than what is proposed in welfare reform.
What I'm getting at here is you're moving in the direction, though, of finding more jobs for people on welfare and trying to place them, right?
Chairman Durfler, Representative Mannix, that's correct.
And may I follow up one more time? When you put all of that together, you're talking then about us authorizing you to move in those directions, but then you're going to have to still go to Ways and Means and convince them to authorize the expenditure for those programs.
Chairman Durfler, Representative Mannix, that's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, just another clarification. The $7.5 million for the new job placement, is that coming from economic development? Is that, how's that money going to be generated? You said there was going to be a transfer of funds.
Chairman Durfler, the money is generated through the diversion from the unemployment insurance contributions.
Okay.
The trans, and that shows on page 3 of the written material we've handed out, Employment Service new jobs placement component, $7.5 million. Mm-hmm. So that is added to the request for diversion for the Employment Division.
Okay, so we're taking money then out of the Employment Division, the taxes that employers are paying, another $7.5 million to fund job programs?
Chairman Durfler, we're using...